1.14, Collapse and Rebirth. In the last episode, we covered the rise of Protestantism and the resulting divide within the Swiss state. In this episode, we will cover the next 150 years of relative stability, ending with the rise of the French Revolution, which will finally kill the Confederacy after nearly 500 years of existence. Between 1648 and 1798, the Confederation was distracted by religious division, with emotions on both sides running high. In 1655, the cities of Bern and Zurich attempted to set up a centralized government to replace the outdated Diet, but the rivalry of the cities failed to create a concrete plan. In 1656, a question as to religious refugees, who were driven from Schweiz and took refuge at Zurich, brought about the First Wilmerican War, in which the Romanists were successful, reinforcing freedom of religious choice in the treaty. Later, the attempts of the Abbot of St. Gallen to reinforce his rights in a nearby tract of land swelled into the Second Wilmerican War, which proved ill-fated for the Romanists. Zurich and Bern both annexed swaths of territory from the Romanist neighbors, that the principle of religious parity was not infringed. Speaking of the Diet, the system was beginning to teeter on collapse. The Romanists had the majority, while the sovereign rights of each member of the League and the limited mandate of the envoys effectively blocked all progress. Zurich, as the leader of the League, managed matters when the Diet was not in session, but could not enforce her orders. The Confederation was little more than a collection of separate nations, and it is really marvelous that it did not break up under its own weight. Throughout the 17th and 18th centuries, the Confederation was practically a dependency of France. The Swiss had to stand by while Louis XIV won Alsace in 1648, Franche-Comte in 1678, and Strasbourg in 1681. But, as Louis inclined more and more to an anti-Protestant policy, the Protestant members of the League began to favor other centers of power, primarily the Prussians. It was through their influence that, in 1707, the Principality of Neuchâtel, on the extinction of the ruling Catholic dynasty, decided in favor of the King of Prussia against the various French pretenders. In 1715, the Romanist members of the League, having just lost the Second Wilmerican War, struck an agreement with France to secure their lost lands in exchange for the French monarch acting as a protector of their people. This effectively vassalized them to the French state, and was strongly objected to by the Protestant members of the Confederation. It was eventually dropped in 1717, when all the Confederates made a fresh defensive alliance, wherein their sovereignty and independence were laid out. Still, France now understood itself as the master of the Swiss Confederation in all but name. Still, the Swiss states spent the next 70 years in relative peace. The influx of Protestant exiles, mostly upper-class intellectuals, resulted in great strides made in sciences and political thought. This, combined with new crops brought over from the New World, greatly increased farm yields. Unfortunately for the farmers, this dropped food prices and forced many to take up secondary positions to make ends meet. In Zurich, this meant textiles, while in Geneva and the Jura Valley, it meant watchmaking, another stereotype to check off the list. The mercenary industry continued at a healthy clip, and the faint beginnings of a tourism industry began, with wealthy Englishmen coming to admire the landscape and libertarian lifestyle. The rise of intellectualism within the Confederacy had one more effect. With the Enlightenment in full swing in Europe, many began seriously considering the notion of a Swiss nation. More than just being a unified country, they envisioned a single ethnicity, not merely a mix of varying peoples from varying cantons. In 1761, a group of these intellectuals established the Helvetic Association, hoping to work for the establishment of their envisioned state. And the use of Helvetic here is key. They are attempting to connect their contemporary society to the united nation once present in the same lands, a common heritage for all French, German, and Italian Swiss. So, as the French Revolution continues, heavy reference to Helvetia will be used to justify the new liberal ideas. Speaking of which, it is now time, at last, to come to that period in history. The Confederation and France had been so closely connected for so long that the outbreak of the French Revolution could not fail to affect the Swiss. The Helvetian Club, not to be confused with the Helvetic Association, was founded at Paris in 1790 by several exiled Vaudois and Freiburgers, and acted as the center from which the new ideas were spread in the western part of the Confederation. This outpouring of intellectual ideas of self-determination would begin a series of rebellions across the cantons. In 1790, the Lower Valais rose up against the oppressive rule of the Upper Valais. In 1791, the Prince Bishopric of Basel was overthrown, with the city and surrounding territory proclaimed the Rauracian Republic. 3 months later, the French annexed it and set up a revolutionary council to govern the area. In 1792, Geneva was invaded and was only saved from France by a force sent from Zurich and Bern. The massacre of the Swiss Guard at the Tuileries on the 10th of August 1792 aroused intense indignation. The rulers of the various cantons, however, unable to implement change, contented themselves with suppressing rebellions by force. In 1795, one Frederick César de la Harpe of Vaud attempted to lead an uprising against their Bernese overlords, but, after failing to gain momentum, he fled to Paris, where he would begin encouraging the French to send in troops. In the south, the Leagues of Rhaetia so violently oppressed their subjects in the Valtellina that in 1797, Napoleon, after conquering Milan from the Austrians, joined the region to the new Cisalpine Republic. Unable to come together to formulate a response, the Diet teetered on collapse, and the fall of the Confederation seemed inevitable. Eventually, the French were persuaded to launch their invasion. The rumors of the vast treasures stored up at Bern, and the desire of securing a bulwark against Austrian attack, prompted the Directory, currently in charge of France, to pursue policy in the region. This was utilized by the leaders of the Reform Party in the Confederation, namely Peter Ox, the Burgomaster of Basel, and the aforementioned Frederick César de la Harpe. Hence, when La Harpe, at the head of some 20 exiles from Vaud and Freiburg, called on the Directory to protect the liberties of Vaud, which he claimed France was required to guarantee from a 16th-century treaty, his appeal found a ready answer. In February 1798, French troops occupied Mühlhausen and Bienne, as well as the lands of the Prince Bishop of Basel. The Lamanic Republic was proclaimed by the elites of Vaud, the first of some 40 short-lived republics in the region. Soon after, French troops entered the region, and the Diet broke up in dismay without taking any steps to avert the coming conflict. French armies occupied Freiburg and Soler, and, after fierce fighting, entered Bern, deserted by her allies and distracted by quarrels within. With the capture of Bern, the stronghold of the aristocratic party, the collapse of the old confederation was complete. The revolution triumphed throughout the rest of the cantons. Nidwalden attempted to resist, but was sacked. French generals devised a scheme by which the confederation, with its associates and subjects, was to be split into three republics, the Telgau, corresponding to the forest districts, the Rhodanic, the westernmost lands, and the Helvetic, the remaining German lands. However, the Directory, prompted by La Harpe and other Swiss exiles, disapproved of this, and on the 29th of March, the Helvetic Republic, one and indivisible, was proclaimed. By the new scheme, the territories of the Everlasting League were split up into 23 administrative districts called cantons, a name now officially used in Switzerland for the first time, though I have been using it for many episodes. In my defense, the term is found in the French Treaty of 1452 and in the Treaties of Westphalia, so it had some contemporary use. A central government was set up, with its seat at Luzern, comprising a Senate and a Great Council, together forming the legislature. These together would nominate 5 members to the Directory, an executive governing body. A Supreme Court of Justice was set up. The status of Swiss citizenship was established and recognized, and absolute freedom of movement within the cantons was given. For the first time, an attempt was made to organize the Confederation as a single state, a change which was vital to the survival of the Swiss state and would be the foundations of modern Switzerland. But the change was too sweeping to last, for it largely ignored the rebellious and patriotic nature that, while recently making the state so vulnerable, had previously allowed the state to go toe-to-toe with the strongest empires in Europe. The three forest districts rose up in rebellion against the invaders and the new constitutions, but the valiant resistance of the Schweizers on the heights of Mortgarten and that of the Unterwaldners were put down by French armies. The proceedings of the French, however, soon turned the image of them as liberators into a much more hated entity. Geneva was annexed to France in April 1798. Gerresau, after an independent existence of over 400 years, was made a mere district of Schweiz. Immense fines were levied, and the treasury at Bern pillaged. The land was treated as if it had been conquered. The new republic was compelled to make a very close offensive and defensive alliance with France, and its directors were nominated from Paris. In June 1799, Zurich, the Forest Cantons, and Rhaetia became the scene of the struggles of the Austrians, welcomed as liberators against the French and Russians. The manner in which reforms were carried out also alienated many, and soon after the Directory gave way to the Consulate in Paris, the Helvetic Directory was replaced by an executive committee. The revolving nature of government in the French Revolution extended to all areas it touched. At this point, it was clear that the attempts of the Helvetic Republic to centralize had moved too fast, but it was not easy to find the happy middle ground, and violent discussions went on between the Unitary Party, headed by Ox and La Harpe, and the Federalist parties. Many drafts were put forward, and one submitted to, but rejected, by a popular vote. In July 1802, the French troops were withdrawn from Switzerland by Bonaparte, ostensibly to comply with the Treaty of Amiens, but really to show the Swiss that their best hopes lay in appealing to him. The Helvetic government was gradually driven back by armed force, and the Federalists seemed positioned to triumph when Bonaparte offered himself as a mediator and summoned 10 of the chief Swiss statesmen to Paris to discuss matters with him. He had long taken a very special interest in Swiss matters, and in 1802 he had given to the Helvetic Republic lands previously seized from Austria. On the other hand, he had made the Valais into an independent republic. In the discussions, he pointed out that Swiss needs required a federal constitution and a neutral position guaranteed by France. Finally, he laid out the Act of Mediation, a document which formed a new era in Swiss history, and the influence of which is visible in the present government. Throughout the text, the word Switzerland is used for the first time as the official name of the Confederation. The 13 members of the old Confederation before 1798 are set up again, and to them are added 6 new cantons, two of which, St. Gallen and Graubünden, were formerly associates, and the 4 others being made up of subject lands conquered at different times: Aargau, Thurgau, Ticino, and Vaud. In the newly established Diet, 6 cantons, which had a population of more than 100,000, those being Bern, Zurich, Vaud, St. Gallen, Graubünden, and Aargau, were given 2 votes, the other cantons having 1 apiece, and the deputies were to vote freely within limits, though not against their instructions. Meetings at the Diet were to rotate between Freiburg, Bern, Solers, Basel, Zurich, and Luzern. The Landsgemeinde, or popular assemblies, were restored in the democratic cantons, the cantonal governments, in other cases, being in the hands of a great council and the small council, acting as legislative and executive bodies respectively. No canton was to form any political alliance abroad or at home. There was no Swiss burghership, as in 1708, but perfect liberty in settlement in any canton. There were to be no privileged classes or subject lands. A very close alliance with France on the basis of that of 1516 was concluded on September 27, 1803. The whole constitution and organization were far better suited for the Swiss than the more symmetrical system of the Helvetic Republic, but, as it was guaranteed by Bonaparte, and his influence was predominant, the whole fabric was bound closely with him, and fell with him. Despite being a near-perfect match for Switzerland, and being adopted in large part by the current government, the ties to the French Revolution ensured its eventual downfall. For 10 years, Switzerland enjoyed peace and prosperity under the new constitution. Intellectuals forged new ideas on education and political reform, while the central government prepared many schemes for the common welfare. On the other hand, the mediator, as Napoleon referred to himself, lavishly expended his Swiss troops, the number of which could only be kept up by a regular levy, while the Berlin decrees raised the price of many staple items. In 1806, the Principality of Neuchâtel was given to Marshal Berthier, Tessin was occupied by French troops from 1810 to 1813, and in 1810, the Valais was made into a department of the Simplon so as to secure its mountain pass. At home, the liberty of moving from one canton to another, though given by the Constitution, was, by the Diet in 1805, restricted by requiring 10 years' residence. All in all, a mixed bag. As soon as Napoleon's power began to wane, the position of Switzerland became endangered. Despite the personal wishes of the Tsar, who, by sheer coincidence, had been tutored by La Harpe, go figure, the Austrians, supported by the reactionary party in Switzerland, and without any real resistance on the part of the Diet or the Russian troops, crossed the frontier on the 21st of December, 1813, and on the 28th of December, the Diet was induced to declare the abolition of the 1803 Constitution. Bern headed the party, which desired to restore the old state of things, but Zurich and the majority stood out for the 19 cantons. The powers exercised great pressure to bring about a meeting of deputies from all the 19 cantons at Zurich. Known as the Long Diet, party strife was very bitter, but on the 12th of September, it decided that the Valais, Neuchâtel, and Geneva should be raised from the rank of associates to that of full members of the Confederation, bringing the total to 22. As compensation, the Congress of Vienna gave Bern the town of Vienne and most of the territories of the Prince Bishop of Basel, known as the Bernese Jura. The latter will prove a point of great contention in the 20th century, but that is a story for a later episode. The Valtellina was granted to Austria, and Mulhausen was not freed from France. This, finally, brings us to the modern borders of Switzerland. On the 7th of August, 1815, the new constitution was sworn to by all the cantons save Nidwalden, who required some persuasion by armed force, and was punished by being forced to cede Engelberg to Obwalden. By the new constitution, the sovereign rights of each canton were fully recognized, and return made to the lines of the old constitution, though there were to be no subject lands, and political rights were not to be the exclusive privilege of any class or citizens. Each canton had one vote in the Diet, where an absolute majority was to decide all matters save foreign affairs, when a majority of 3/4 was required. The management of current business was to shift every 2 years between the governments of Zurich, Bern, and Luzern. The monasteries were guaranteed their rights and privileges, and no canton was to make any alliance contrary to the rights of the Confederation or of any other canton. Provision was made for a federal army. Finally, the Congress, on the 20th of November, 1815, placed Switzerland under the guarantee of the Great Powers, who engaged to maintain their neutrality, thus freeing Switzerland from her subservience to France, and up until today, securing their independence. It is more than a little ironic that in the end, the nation that gained the most out of the French Revolution was the Swiss. Rather than devastated by internal conflict and international warfare, the Swiss had been forcefully pushed from their medieval government into a new era, accomplishing what many had tried for so long. While in the coming years, Switzerland would relapse into its old governmental structure, the changes made prompted further evolution in the nature of Swiss government. To this day, the existence of a Swiss nationality and unified state are more attributable to this period than any other. At last, we can say goodbye to the Confederation, and hello to Switzerland. Next time, we will watch Switzerland turn inward and decide exactly what the nature of their state now was. Until then, share the show, rate the show, subscribe to the show, send me emails at History of Little Europe, and until next time, Bozek Nanya, ciao, and goodbye.